call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Looks like it's 1:37 today. We have with us Senator Schauer, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Colgill as a chairman. We have three bills on the table today. Senate Bill 134 is first hearing today. My expectation is to have the senator lay it out. And then if we can meet tomorrow, if you'll all be here at 9 a.m. in the Belts Room, we can probably consider it and move it out. And then we'll bring up three other bills. But today, I wanted to give the senator an opportunity to introduce Senate Bill 134, take up questions. And let's see, I have one person to testify on this bill from in Petersburg. But Senator Gardner, this is a bill that's not been new to us, at least you and me having this discussion for some years now. And it looks like a pretty good approach to this. So why don't you introduce yourself and then go through the bill, and maybe if you want your staff, we can go through the sectional real quick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for hearing the bill. I'm Berta Gardner. I represent Midtown Anchorage in the Senate. And the gentleman who's on the phone is one of the people who brought this issue to our attention.
But I want to be very clear. Is this not on?
Evidently not working.
Okay. I want to be very clear that the bill is not an attempt to intervene in any way in the case that he has ongoing about a custody issue, but rather it raised the question about termination of parental rights when the child is a result of rape or sexual assault. So we looked into the statutes and we discovered that our existing statutes already cover this. There are three ways parental rights can be terminated. One is if it's a child in need of aid case where a child has been abused, neglected, abandoned, and under the China statutes, which are referenced there, they can termination of parental rights can happen. Secondly, a child can be freed for adoption under certain circumstances. The third way is when the child is conceived in rape. And that is existing in our statute, and my aide Nathaniel will explain to you why we are so confident that our language actually does that. But the problem is that we've talked with family law attorneys and others and know of some court cases where people sort of dispute that you can terminate parental rights based on the child's conception. So we wanted to make that abundantly clear. We're not having new policy. We're clarifying existing policy here. And in all cases, termination of parental rights should be with a court approval and in the best interests of the child. So sometimes it might be different than you'd expect. So that's important. And this is an issue that doesn't affect very many Alaskans, but it's a huge issue for the people who are impacted. And we believe that it's important for a woman who is pregnant by rape and considering what her options are, that she be able to move forward in confidence if she chooses to do so, that she can avoid being locked into a long-term relationship with the person who is abusive. And, of course, this will mostly happen to women, but the statutes are gender neutral, and it is possible for an older woman having a relationship with a very young boy to find this kind of circumstance where perhaps the male party would invoke this. So we don't preclude that possibility. And with that, I would like my aide, with your permission, to give you a little more specificity and then go through the sectional.
Thank you. Nathaniel, why don't you go ahead and put yourself on the record and then just take us through the sectional. That's what you'll do. Thank you.
All right, Chair Coghill, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to be here. For the record, I'm Nathaniel Grabman, staff Senator Berta Gardner. 1987, Alaska Statute 2523-180C3 was passed into law. Looking back on the history at the time, and it becomes fairly clear that the legislative intent at that time was to create a mechanism by which a mother could terminate the parental rights of a rapist father. Fast forwarding to 2015, Congress passed the Rape Survivor Child Custody Act. What that law did was it allocated a pool of money which could be used for, which would be given to states that, it created this pool of money which states could use to that could qualify by having laws on the books or enacting laws which allowed for the termination of parental rights in cases where the child was conceived through rape. Alaska has applied for and received that money each of the last two federal fiscal years and recently applied for the upcoming year. So given that, we're fairly confident that the laws that are on Alaska's books at the moment, you know, effectively do that. The question then becomes, why this bill?
Right.
And the reason is that in 1987, there was already termination of parental rights language in a statute, which was in Title 25 and Section 23, which deals with adoption. That's what its header title is. And what that means in practice is that if a family law attorney has not had significant experience with adoption or child in need of aid cases, they may not be familiar with that. And in speaking with a number of such attorneys, it seems clear that it's not a well-known possibility in law. Similarly, I think that a person who may be on the line might speak to this, but our understanding is that in at least one court case, the judge has said that parental rights could not be terminated in a situation like this. So the goal is really just to clarify the existing language and potentially raise a little bit more awareness of its existence. With that, if you'd like, I can go through the sectional.
Would you please?
All right.
A lot of it is conforming, so if you want to go to the part that is the key element and then show where the conforming parts are, that might be satisfactory with us as a committee.
Yeah, thank you. The chair just mentioned, almost every section in the sectional makes reference to Section 11, so that's kind of the main linchpin of it. Section 11 just restructures AS 2523-180C to clarify that termination of parental rights can be ordered in an independent proceeding if the child has been conceived through rape or sexual assault. Then I'll just go through the rest of it numerically.
All right.
Sections 1 and 2 are just conforming language. Section 3 authorizes the court to appoint a guardian ad litem in such cases to make sure that the termination of parental rights would be in the best interest of the child. Sections 4 through 10, similarly, are just conforming language. Section 12 through 15, more conforming language. Section 16 adds a new subsection to AS 2523-180, which just clarifies that it would initiate an independent proceeding not connected to a petition for adoption or a proceeding under 4710, which is the section which deals with child in need of aid proceedings. Section 17 is more conforming language. And Section 18 describes how this bill would have the effect of changing existing court rules. So that's the sectional. If anyone has any questions, we're willing to answer them. Also, I believe Tracy Spartz Campbell, who's the Deputy Director of the Office of Children's Services, is either in the room or available. All right. Nancy Mead, the general counsel of the Alaska court system, is also available.
Okay. Any questions for the sponsor at this point? All right. I think you got the issue pretty well outlined for us. So Section 11 and then the new section on the filing a petition. So maybe what I can do is get Nancy Mead to come up and talk to us a little bit about the court rule change and how that petition might work, practically speaking, if you don't mind. Thank you, Senator and Mr. Grabman. Just on the practicality of it, maybe you could tell us the court rule modification and the effect of that, and this new petition, how that practically will work.
Thank you. For the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System. And to the chair, the court rule changes in here are indirect court rule amendments, and that is the legislative legal has noted that because we have rules on the similar subject in the adoption area, it may be that this statutory change would cause the court to look again, at that rule to see whether actual wording changes are necessary. In my experience, we typically put a note in after the rule saying that, you know, users of this rule may need to go look at this statute to see if maybe there might be some impact on our procedures. I don't see any great impact on our procedures. As the sponsor noted, this would not be a very common type of proceeding. But what the bill does is raise the awareness both for users and the public and judges and everybody else in an area that apparently has not been well understood the way the statute is drafted now. So I'm not certain we would actually do a direct wording change to those rules, but we would put a notation in there so that people would know that they could take advantage of this statutory process.
So, Nancy, in Section 16, there's a petition for the termination. My expectation is that is available now. So is this just making it more explicit?
To the chair, yes, we have forms and such as petitions for all sorts of proceedings that we have. If this bill would pass, we would look again at our forms to see whether a different checkbox option might be added so that the same form could be used for this different type of proceeding. And again, I'm not certain that it would need it, but if it passes, we go back and take a look to see whether our existing petition to terminate parental rights needs some sort of modification to accommodate this other scenario that could lead to such a proceeding. Okay. So we have the petition already.
All right. Questions? Nancy, thank you very much.
Certainly.
Appreciate it. We should probably get the Office of Children's Service up here. I have at least one question, and so, and it might be as easy a question as I gave the court. I don't know. But.
For the record, this is Tracy Sparks Campbell, Deputy Director for OCS.
Thank you very much for coming to the committee. Just on the language that's operative in Section 11, proceeding under 4710, my guess is that is a civil proceeding that is pretty common for termination of parental rights.
That's correct.
Okay. Does this add anything as far as new information or anything that you already are dealing with?
Mr. Chair, we don't see this in any way changing the way we're doing business now.
All right. Questions? That's all I wanted to know. Thank you very much. Pretty straightforward bill. Any questions for the sponsor? I'm going to go to public testimony if not. If you want to stick around, Senator, I may just see if the committee wants to hold this or move it on. So maybe let's go to Miles Curtis, who has signed up for public testimony, and we'll go from there. So, Miles, are you on? Can you hear us?
Yes, this is Miles. Can you hear me okay?
Very well. Put yourself on the record and give us your testimony, please.
Hey, this is Miles Curtis. I'm in support of SB 134. And I'm a grandfather of a child who was conceived in rape. And my family's been involved in a five-year custody battle so far involving this particular situation. I am the child's psychological parent. I did raise her. My daughter was quite young when she had the child. And I raised him up until the age of 6 years old, and then he was taken away from us and put into the family of the offender here in Petersburg. We relocated because the child was very much duressed over the situation. He didn't want to, of course, leave his family and his friends and community of Haines. This custody battle will probably go on until he's 18 years old, more or less. And this is probably the case in most cases like this, where the victim would like to get relief from having to endure a custody battle with their abuser. Of course, Alaska, as Nathaniel pointed out, does have a law, but the courts didn't want to recognize it. It's unfortunate, but the law, I've kind of watched the evolution of these laws in other states. Most states actually 5 years ago didn't have laws in regards to this topic, but now only a few states remain. Some laws are better than others. Alaska's law, if it was clarified, like Senator Gardner's proposed bill states, would be a usable law, but it wouldn't be probably to the higher standard that most states are kind of pushing to now, because a lot of times these don't work in court. You have to use a little stronger language, I think. Is it okay if I point out what I would amend at this point, or does it matter?
Sure. That's your privilege as somebody given a public testimony. You get to take your best shot at this bill.
Well, primarily, this, you know, the subject of best interest of the child, it should be stated that, and a lot of states have done this, it's always in the best interest of the child. See, rape is a crime that the parent committed, and it's never in his interest to be placed in the home of the abuser. And that presents a rebuttable presumption that the rapist would have to overcome, not the victim. Typically in court, the victim would have to prove the parent unfit. In this case, the unfit parent would have to prove their fitness, which changes things a little bit in the favor of the victim. And some states even mandate that the judge has no discretion in whether or not. If rape is proven, that's the end of the story. He loses his rights. We're talking about legal parental rights here. See, if a person loses their legal parental rights, they no longer have the authority of the court to back them up. And this is probably the biggest issue, is that he has the court's support, and he can continue to be abusive to the victim in these cases, which is the case in our situation. The courts have treated this like a property right, traditionally, like the child is they're in genetic entitlement to that parent's involvement in their life. But they needed a statutory mechanism to change the court's direction on this. I referred to Nathaniel, the Washington law that passed, the state of Washington passed a law last year, and this is actually their second attempt, I believe, of passing a law. They did it the first time, it was 2 weeks, and then the second time they came through and really streamlined everything, making it easier for the victim to approach the court. There's actually a form you can download that, and then you have like a 30-day time window where the court has to hear you. So it's streamlined, and it allows the victim to petition the court for termination outside of the custody case. I would be certain that they wouldn't have the same judge and so forth. And there isn't really a need for an ad litem in a case like this. In our case, the ad litem is strongly in support of the relationship with the father. But then again, the ad litem is probably considering her own situation, too, in this case, because she's has a bit of a financial incentive to keep this in custody. It's going to go on for years.
So, Miles, I can't retry that.
I think this needs to be taken into consideration, too.
Yeah. Miles, first of all, I wouldn't want to necessarily walk in your shoes on this journey, but you... sounds like you have researched this fairly well, but I'm going to ask you to wrap up.
There's also the financial aspect of it. My daughter originally had a court-appointed attorney, and then for some reason, when he left the state, they wouldn't reappoint her one. But there's an incurring debt that's going on, and we've had to move, of course, and it's uprooted our lives. We can't really make decisions on where we want to go or what we want to do with our lives at this point. We're kind of locked into this custody situation. So we're looking for relief.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to come before the committee. Senator, did you want to do any final comment on this, especially since some of the issues were brought up by the testifier? I can see where clear direction for the court, but certainly you want the court to be able to weigh the weigh the differences. So any further input?
That's it exactly, and I think Mr. Curtis has a very heartbreaking kind of tale, but I don't know the details out of it. And even though he was very instrumental in bringing the issue to my attention and starting our research, I just want to reiterate that we're not trying to intervene or influence the outcome of his particular case, but he raised a very good issue, which is that a person who has a child out of rape should have control
right.
over what contact, if any, that she has with him afterwards. At the same time, I think having it be determined by a judge with the assistance of a guardian ad litem who is an independent person just making recommendations about what's in the child's interest, I think is appropriate. It's what we do in a lot of circumstances, and certainly with the China cases, an advocate for the child only and not advocating for either parent or any other person in the dispute is important. And with that, I'm very grateful you've heard and understood what the issue is, and I hope to see it move forward.
Any further questions for the sponsor at this point? Because of the time that we are in the legislature, I'm willing to go ahead and move this on. This has been an issue that I've been involved with as well, at more peripheral level, but at least trying to figure out a good answer. And I'd rather have one good answer than maybe not hitting the perfect balance. Mm-hmm. And I think I've read this. I've been involved in it. My staff has been involved in it to some degree. And thank you, Senator,
thank you.
Very much.
Thank you.
And we're still on version A, which is highly unusual this time of the year. So
mm-hmm.
I'm going to make a motion.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we move Senate Bill number 134, version A, out of committee with individual recommendations, and I don't see a fiscal note.
No fiscal note. Any objection to moving it from committee? There is one. It's a zero fiscal note. Okay. As far as I know, it goes to rules from here. So, any objection to moving it from committee? All right. Then we'll move Senate Bill 134 from committee.
Thank you very much.
Take a brief at ease. We'll call the Senate Judiciary back to order. Next item that we'll take up, Representative Guttenberg has House Joint Resolution number 21. There was a sponsor substitute that a committee substitute that I had. Let me just take a brief view because I don't have it in front of me. Sorry about that. We're back to order, Senate Judiciary. I just flipped too many pages. So we have a J version that I'd ask Senator Wilkowski if he'd just make a motion to adopt it.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt CS for House Joint Resolution number 21, version /J, as the committee.
Yeah, and I'll object, and then I can have one of the staff members, Chad Hutchison, just... I think there's just two changes. So, Chad, why don't you just speak to him, and then we'll have the sponsor see if he has any objections.
Senator Coghill, yes. For the record, my name is Chad Hutchison, staff to Senator Coghill. As you mentioned, there's two substantive changes that did result in one title change. As far as the title change goes, The previous title was urging the federal government to respect the authority of the state to regulate marijuana use, production, and distribution and honor previous federal guidance on marijuana policy and urging the federal government to reconsider its listing of marijuana as a Schedule I controlled substance. It was changed to urging the federal government to respect the authority of the state to regulate marijuana use, production, and distribution and urging the federal government to reconsider its listing of marijuana as a Schedule I controlled substance. So the words, and to honor previous federal guidance on marijuana policy, were eliminated. For the first substantive change, it's a whereas provision on page 3, and it went from whereas United States Attorney General Jeff Sessions' rescission of the Department of Justice's August 29, 2013 memorandum and other federal guidance on state marijuana policy undermines federal priorities, was now changed to whereas United States Attorney General Jeff Sessions' rescission of the Department of Justice's August 29, 2013 memorandum and other federal guidance on state marijuana policy demonstrates a need to address federal law. So the eliminated language was undermines federal priorities. The last change was it in the be it resolved provision on page 3. The previous language said, be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature urges the federal government to respect the authority of the state of Alaska to regulate marijuana use, production, and distribution and forbear any federal interference in marijuana policy of states where marijuana has been legalized in keeping with the federal enforcement priorities enumerated in the United States Department of Justice's August 29, 2013 memorandum, and be it. It was now changed to be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature urges the federal government to respect the authority of the state of Alaska to regulate marijuana use, production, and distribution and forbear any federal interference in marijuana policy of states where the marijuana has been legalized and urges the United States Congress to address these issues while respecting states' rights. The eliminated language was in keeping with the federal enforcement priorities enumerated in the United States Department of Justice's August 29, 2013 memorandum. And those are all the changes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In my legislative career, I have always recognized that if you could say the same thing with fewer words, you're doing better. So thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm supportive of the changes.
Yeah, and I was trying to make the federal government I was trying to get to Congress to say, Congress, you got to do something about this. Because the bureaucracy could do stuff, but really Congress needs to be the one that makes the change. Any discussion on that? Then I'll remove my objection. We have the J version before us. I think we have debated this a little bit, even in the Senate, on a sense of a House, there was some struggles with it. But I think what you've done here, Representative, has figured out a way to say this so that we can stand with you. So if you want to go ahead and give any presentation you want on this particular issue, what I'd like to do is have you get to say your statement on the record and then move this bill along.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, if you the resolution reads by itself, right? It is, and this takes a while to draft it, right? But it, in many ways, it is an illustrative function and a position of the legislature that hopefully at the end of the day of the legislative body that there's a conflict and we want it resolved. And with 40-0 vote out of the other body, I think it speaks well for us. And it was today or yesterday that there was a change in the policy at the highest level. And without going into it, it's we need to give it all the help we can.
Agreed. Any comment, question, debate? Senator Wilkowski, you want to go ahead and make a motion?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move Senate CS for SS for House Joint Resolution Number 21 /J out of committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note.
Any objection to moving the bill? The resolution is moved. Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. We'll take a brief of these while we sign these documents. Judiciary, come back to order. The next issue that we have before us is House Bill 44, which got changed very significantly in the state affairs. And so I have Ryan Johnson from who's staff to Representative Grin, who can come and present this thing before us. And I greatly appreciate it. I know that this was changed significantly in last committee, but give us the best shot at what we do, what we have before us, and maybe we'll just walk through the major chunks of this and the policy calls, and we'll just get this thing going. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name for the record is Ryan Johnston, staff to Representative Grin. Representative Grin apologizes for not being able to be here. He's currently in finance. As the chair mentioned, there was some pretty substantive changes made in Senate State Affairs. So the current version you have in front of you is version R. From version N, the sections of version R can be found in the corresponding sections of version N. Version R, section 1, corresponds with section 7. Actually, I'm going to hold that for last. I apologize,
right,
Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
So the new sections of the bill include sections 1 and 2, which prohibits foreign corporations and nationals from making political contributions to candidates in state elections. Section 3, page 6, line 5 through 12, amends AS 2410-120A to implement a stricter policy on legislative foreign travel. Section 4, page 6, lines 5 through 12, amends AS 2410-130B, so there will be no per diem for legislators after 120 days if the budget has not been passed. Section 5, page 6, lines 25 through 31, amends AS 2410-130C to direct the Legislative Council to adopt a per diem policy in accordance with Section 4 of the bill. Section 6, page 8, lines 1 through 12, amends AS 2445-121A to read that a lobbyist may only purchase a non-alcoholic beverage for a legislator. Section 10, which is page 9, amends AS 2410-120A to clarify that a legislator can accept a non-alcoholic beverage from a lobbyist. Section 12, page 11, lines 4 through 19, amends AS 3923-540D to include the new stipulations on per diem set forth in Section 4. Section 13, page 11, line 20, repeals AS 2410-051B. And Section 14, page 11, lines 21 through 14, amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska to direct the Alaska Public Office Commission to adopt the necessary regulations to implement Sections 1 and 2 of this bill. Section 15, page 11, lines 27 through 31, amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska to state that if any section of this bill is found invalid, then the rest of the underlying bill will not be affected. Section 16, page 12, line through line 1 states that the section 14 of the bill will take effect immediately upon passage, and section 17, page 12, line 2 changes the effective date to July 1st, 2018.
So it's my understanding that this mirrors nearly identically the initiative. I also understand that the representative is actually a participant in the initiative, but that you are not a participant.
That is very correct, Mr. Chair. I have not worked on the initiative at all, so yeah.
I remember that from the State Affairs Committee. So it probably my expectation, since he is one of the sponsors, that we get him in front of the committee and talk about some of the policy calls that he wants to bring forward here. It looks like probably the only difference is on the de minimis value of a meal over against $15, which is already in our statute.
Mm-hmm.
That's everything looks very similar to me. So. Is that your take as well?
Yeah, from my reading of it, that is absolutely correct, Mr. Chair.
Right. Is there any questions for the sponsor's staff at this point?
Well, if I could, Mr. Chair, does the representative support the new version of the legislation?
The representative is appreciative of the conversation that goes on with this bill and appreciates the ability to speak before committee and apologizes that he can't be here currently.
Yeah.
So.
good political answer.
Do you think my intention is to have a meeting tomorrow morning at 9? We have three other bills, but I would like to invite him to committee, and I think there are probably about five or six policy calls in here that we as legislators probably should have a broader discussion on, and I wouldn't mind having that in front of the public as much as we can, but I don't want to put you in a position of doing that. But I think that he would probably be good for us to have what I would consider just a dialogue about the policy calls within the committee. So would you extend the invitation to him? It's not a regularly scheduled meeting, but I've applied for a meeting tomorrow morning at 9, and I would encourage you to do that. We have three bills, but one of them will go fairly quickly. The other two are just a rollout. Mm-hmm. But this could dominate a conversation. I think it's well worthwhile having. But I did last week, this is the first chance we've had to do a rollout on it. And in order to have something in front of me, I needed to at least show this. I struggle with it. I'll be fair with you. The per diem question, I'll give you an example. Since I've been down here for a number of years, many of the issues that we've dealt with, surely you could lay at the legislators' feet that we've gone over time. But I would say equally, the governors have been part of the issue of why we go over the 121 days. To penalize the people who will be the voice of the general population, I struggle with. And if you could lay it entirely at the legislators' feet, you might get me. But there are things that are tougher and out of our control, including, I'll just give you one example, and whether we like it or not, the spring forecast has a big impact on how our budget kind of either gets fixed or doesn't get fixed. But I am not going to excuse the legislature entirely. It's just that they will have to take their hits, but sometimes it's totally out of their control. And so to penalize them for those times, I think I find difficult. The international dollars, I don't know exactly what I know all about that. In my particular race, that has not ever been an issue. But the international travel is something that I can understand why people might see that's bad. But I'm just going to say this on the record. Whether we like it or not, Alaska is an international state. Our biggest trading partner is international. It's China, Japan, and Korea, I think in that order, and Canada. We're an Arctic state. We have to deal with Arctic international waters. We have to deal with an Arctic circumpolar group. The Pacific fishery is international. We have to deal with both the West Coast as well as China, Indonesia. Everything we do in our tourism generally has an international flavor to it. So whether it's cruise ships, oil companies, fishing industry, mining industry, all international. And so to exclude the impact that international conversation might have on a campaign, I think might be unwise. I don't know enough about it to look at it. I will study the language, but whether we like it or not, even though we're divided into 40 and 20, those 40 and 20 have to deal with a pretty good-sized international market. We also have to deal with national issues because two-thirds of the state of Alaska is a national interest. And whether we like that or not, we have to deal with people all over the United States. So we might need to be a part of international organizations as well as national organizations. I'll give you one example. I've been involved with the Pacific Northwest Economic Region, because whatever we do with Canada has had some impact on us, because we're both Arctic states and we have Pacific Rim issues that we'll hold in common, plus waterways, plus culture. So those are the kind of things that I think I've got to think about as I look at this this bill. I can understand why people say outside money shouldn't impact Alaskans. The trouble is, international stuff impacts Alaska in every way. So it's just something we have to struggle with and work through. It is true that money is perceived as buying elections, and I understand that part of it. And it's a matter of the integrity of the individual, whether or not the money is used to get a voice so that they can communicate with their constituents, or if it's a voice that is driven by a special interest group. That could be bad whether it's international or national or local, in my view. So I struggle with those things. I'm just, when you go back and talk to your representative, those are some of the questions that I'm going to have to wrestle through as I look at this, both initiative and law. Is there anything that you'd like to hear from the sponsor, from the committee on? Well, Senator Wilkowski,
I'm just curious if there's any legal opinion or consultation about whether or not this version would take the initiative off the ballot.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there was a memo that the Senate State Affairs Committee received, and I can get that memo to the committee.
If you would, I'd appreciate that. We should probably take a look at that.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, from the memo is that, even though there are some changes in this bill from the initiative, this bill still satisfies the intent of the initiative, even with those changes. But that being said, again, it would rest on a court case, and if there was a there could be a case brought. But in their opinion, they fixed some of those issues, like the chair mentioned, the diminutive amount for meal. So those kinds of things were changed. But I can get that legal memo for you.
Well, I put it in the members' packet, so sorry, Senator.
Apologies.
This is that time of year where our packet gets bigger than we can flip through all the time. It's a memorandum dated March 21st, and it's by Dan Wayne. And so before we move on with this bill, I would encourage members to kind of read that, peruse through it, and maybe there are questions that arise out of that that we can have. Do you have it in your packet?
I do, and it's Mr. Chairman, and I did browse through that, and that seemed to be more of a question of whether or not the bill was constitutional, addressing constitutional issues, if I'm looking at the right memo, as opposed to whether or not it would actually take it off the initiative.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, those constitutional concerns arise, and I guess, again, that comes really down to a court case, because they are concerns, and the initiative was found not to be not outright unconstitutional, like we heard in Senate State Affairs. So in our opinion, that those are concerns, but again, the Lieutenant Governor's office did say that the initiative was not unconstitutional, mm-hmm. So it had the ability to move forward and go on the ballot. So we can also have somebody from the Lieutenant Governor's office come if the committee would like to explain that.
Senator Wilkowski, what I heard in State Affairs was the question of whether it was constitutional to go on the ballot is one question. The other question is whether it's constitutional in its actual policy calls. And I think we should probably dig into that a little bit, because that's a bigger question. And I think that's something we need to be alert to, and we probably should get some legal advice on that. And
if I could,
Senator Wilkowski,
I am looking over, and there was some discussion of the effect of the bill on the initiative election, and the conclusion looks like it doesn't look like a
emphatic.
Doesn't look like a slam dunk in either direction, although he does say the court would probably find that the bill passes the three-part test. And then it goes on. It does go on to talk about some of the constitutional issues.
And to be fair, I haven't studied this to the degree that I should. I wanted the sponsor to at least have some say in it. And if we can have him maybe before us tomorrow, that would be a further conversation we can have. I'm probably not a big fan of either the initiative or this bill. So partly because I think that it has some restrictions that may be on people outside of their control. And then it supposes some things that I don't know that are exactly true, and that is that the lobbyists have the kind of authority that it supposes in this. And so, but I'm open to discussion of that because it's not been true in my case, but it might be true in others. So, you know, and I've been around here long enough to know that some people are persuaded by an individual incident, probably much far greater than they are ever by some of the lobbyists. On the other hand, I've seen some lobbyists have some a pretty significant authority or power, I guess you could say, to persuade. Other questions before, I'm going to lay this aside, but we'll bring it up. And if I can get the a representative to come and have a dialogue with us on this, certainly the intention of this is, if it is intended to pass this legislature, that it might be something that would come off the ballot. That's part of the discussion. The other part of the discussion is the policy questions in it. So if you could invite him, if he can't make it, I'll understand that.
I know he does have a 9 a.m. finance meeting, but if we can pull him out of that, we'll do our best, Mr. Chair.
For 20 minutes, if possible. And I think if we can keep the questions fairly pointed, we'll do that.
Just something that might help. Version or section 7, 8, 9, and 11 are the sections from the previous bill. So if there were any questions on those.
7, 8, 9, and 11.
7, 8, 9, and 11. And those were from the previous version that I was more.
All right.
I took more part in creating that piece of legislation. So if there were any questions about that, I can answer those if well, possible for the committee. But.
So will you be here with us tomorrow as well?
I will.
I will put some more thought into those four sections so that I can have you expound on them a little more thoroughly. Other questions? So I'm going to lay House Bill 44 aside, and we'll pick that up tomorrow, along with the military justice, House Bill 307. My intention is to bring that up for discussion, any amendments, if you have any, and move it along. And then I was going to have the departments. They have two bills from two different departments. One is Fire, Forest, Land, and Prevention, and then Securities Act with penalties, which I understand is a rewrite of the securities. I wanted that laid out. My hope is to get to 44 tomorrow and again Wednesday. My intention is to try to deal with the 208, which is the trust bill, on Wednesday, if we can. So thank you very much, Ryan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And there's nothing else to come before the committee. We'll adjourn.